I can do better. I can do anything better than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. It's appealing for us to think of great artists as having great rivalries. Maybe you remember an exhibition called Matisse-Picasso a couple of years back. It looked at those artists' friendship and ferocious competition. We do love the idea of two creative giants looking over each other's shoulders and silently envying the other's genius. It brings them down to earth, makes them more like the rest of us. My guest to talk about this is the writer Paul Theroux. He's written 24 novels, as well as many travel books drawn from his journeys in Africa, Asia, the Mediterranean coast, and South America. His latest book is the novel Blinding Light. Paul Theroux, welcome to Studio 360.
It's great to be here, Kurt.
One reason we thought of you for this show is your friendship with the Nobel Prize-winning writer V.S. Naipaul, whom you met years ago when you were in Africa.
Yes.
Your relationship with Naipaul is the subject of one of your books, and lots of people have characterized that relationship as a rivalrous one. I wonder if you agree.
No. It wasn't rivalrous at all. It's kind of because I remember where I met him and how he behaved, and what an interesting guy he seemed to me at the time. He was 34 years old, but he seemed much older. I was 22. A difference in ages meant that it couldn't possibly be a rivalry. It was a master-servant relationship, or a teacher-student relationship. It was a mentor, whatever. It was very good for me. I mean, he taught me things that I'll always remember. He said famously, he said, "I have no masters, I have no rivals, I have no competitors, I have no boss, I owe nothing to anyone, I am just myself." And he said that that's what a writer must be. A writer must have no rivals.
Is it not possible, though, or does it seem entirely untrue that, yes, you were this young man looking toward up to this master when you were 22 and he was 34, but by the time you wrote this book and you were whatever you were, 40-something or 50 perhaps, do you not see that that's possible, that this once, you know, obedient, subordinate relationship blossomed into some kind of rivalrous, envious feeling, or not?
At a certain point, yes, I think it was a rivalry, not in my eyes, perhaps in his, because he felt underrewarded. His mantra was, "I want $1 million. I got to have it was £1 million. I've got to have £1 million. If I have £1 million, I'll be all right." When my books began making movies, he said, "You got $1 million for that, didn't you?" I said, "No, I didn't get anything like $1 million." And I could see that he really wanted. He's a very, very insecure person, and he felt that he security came from money. Of course, we know that security doesn't come from money. Although he got his million. I mean, when I was in South Africa, I saw a headline: "Pessimistic Globetrotter wins Nobel Prize," and I thought I had got it, and he got it.
Well, there you go. You're rivalrous, pessimistic globetrotters.
That's right. That's right. Who's the most pessimistic? But I think actually he felt he was my rival, but I didn't think that I was his at all. And sometimes rivalries can be one-sided. Anyway, I once said to him, "You know, I was reading George Orwell's essays, and I said I find there's you have the same qualities as Orwell." And he said, "I don't think Orwell is much of a writer. Do you really?" And I said, "Well, yes." He said, "Well, he's overrated, don't you think?" And I thought, well, that's interesting. He never wanted to hear. You know, if you asked Naipaul who he liked, he would say nobody, no living writer, and only a few dead ones. I'd say Henry James, he said he overwrites. I'd say Orwell, he's overrated. You say Dickens, he overwrites. You'd mention anyone, D.H. Lawrence, Thackeray, Melville, Emily Dickinson. I recited an Emily Dickinson poem to him, and he said, "It sounds like twaddle." And so that kind of judgment makes you think he's competing.
And once you wrote this,
made me think that anyway.
Once you wrote your book about him and your relationship with him, did that sort of exercise whatever feelings you had about that relationship and whatever rivalrous feelings he felt or non-rivalrous feelings?
Yes. Yeah, definitely exercise. When a friendship ends, it is dead as a doornail and is a great subject. And there are not many books about friendship, or a great friendship, because you can only write about it when it ends. Then you have a perspective on it. I didn't dislike Naipaul at the end, but I thought, I can't trust him. And I suppose he felt the same thing. Something had ended, and it ends forever. So it's writing the book, as you to use your word, yes, it exercised something, but it also reminded me of all the things that I hadn't written about. The idea of writing about a friendship is very threatening to people, and so my reviews were terrible, but because people saying, "Well, if he's doing that to his friend, you know, what would he do to me? What kind of a person is he?" But it wasn't a getting even book. It wasn't saying what an awful person Naipaul was. It was how wonderful it is to know someone like that over 30 years and become a writer and learn so much. And what an odd fit. I remember Philip Roth read it and he said, he's a great character. I couldn't invent the things, you know, the things that he says and the things that he does are just so strange. He's just a character. You've got to write about him as an odd fish.